Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, good morning and welcome. For those of you who are with us for the first time, my name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And we are coming out of an amazing celebration last week with our Easter services. If you weren't able to be here with us, that's just really, really sad for you. And I told you to be here. I had someone reach out to me this past week, and they said the rap song leading into the message isn't on YouTube. And I said, I told you to be here. I told you to be here. I told you and told you and told you. But no, we are. It was an amazing, amazing celebration of what Jesus has done and what Jesus has made possible. And this week, as we come together, we're looking at, as we talked about last week, Jesus is moving into our life, and he's trying to bring new life. He's trying to resurrect all these different aspects of who we are, including our ability to be able to love. And as we come together this week, we're going to begin a conversation where we focus on just that, how Jesus wants to help us learn again how to be able to love better. There are very few things in our culture that our culture is more consumed by than love. There are very few things that we're more consumed by than love. Over half of the songs that are written in our culture are about love. And that's a really conservative estimate. Some people estimate it could be as high as 80% of the songs that are written today are written about love. Almost every TV show, almost every movie that you watch has something to do with love. If it's not the main plot, there's a subplot there. And we watch countless and countless hours of worthless TV just to find out, will they finally get together? Will they finally like each other at the same time? It's everywhere. It's all around us. And at first, when you hear that, you'd be tempted to think, man, we've made way too big a deal. We have made way too big a deal of this love thing. But it's interesting, when you come to the teachings of Jesus, Jesus says some pretty amazing things about love. And those that Jesus taught, his disciples, they say some pretty powerful things about love. At one point in the scriptures, it says that God is love, 1 John 4:8. It says that God doesn't say that he's loving. God doesn't say that he loves. God says, no, I am love. If you could find one word that would capture me, if you could find one word that would define me, it's this word love. This is who I am. This is what I'm all about. At another point, Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he says, this is how people are going to know you. They're going to know you by the way that you love each other. He says, the way that you love is going to be different from the way other people love. The way that people are going to realize who you are is actually by love. It's that important. It's that significant. At another point, John says, if you claim to know God, but you don't love, if you claim to know who God is, if you claim to be in a relationship with Jesus, but you don't love well, he says, you're a liar, and the truth isn't in you. Jesus gives his disciples one command. He says, I want for you to love the way that I've loved you. At one point, Jesus says, you can take everything that God's doing in your life and everything that God is leading you into, and you can wrap it up into two statements. Love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. He says, you can take it all and wrap up everything that God's doing. You can wrap it up in love. When Jesus steps into our story, he doesn't step in and say, hey, you're making too big a deal out of this love thing. He actually steps in and says, no, you really haven't even begun to realize how important it is. Even with as obsessed as you are with this idea of love, you still haven't begun to realize just how important it actually is. It's at the core of this entire thing that I'm doing. The problem isn't that you pay too much attention to it. He says, the problem is you're just not very good at it. The problem isn't that you're too focused on it. He said, the problem is you just don't really understand it very well. And there are all these terrible things that
that we believe about it. One of the worst things that we believe about love, one of the worst things that we believe about love is that it's supposed to come natural. If you wanted to become, if you wanted to become a cashier at Best Buy, which I know so many of you dream of being, if you wanted to become a cashier at Best Buy, you'd have to go through more training than most of you did to get married. You would. We spend countless hours of our life training to be productive in the workforce. We spend countless hours of our life training to do what we're going to do professionally. And we spend almost no time learning how to be able to love. We spend almost no time in training in how to be able to love well. Almost none. Why? Because we think it's supposed to come natural. We think you're just supposed to understand it. You're supposed to just pick that up from your parents. For most of us, that's a terrifying idea. Terrifying idea. But we are. You're just supposed to know. Which is why for so many of us, we never actually ask for help when it comes to this. So often I have couples walk into my office and they share with me their story. And I think to myself, I could have helped you 5 years ago. I could have helped you 3 years ago. But we have this idea that you're just supposed to know. You're just supposed to figure it out, and so we don't ask for help until it's so far gone. We see it inside of our dinner groups. Over and over again, when couples actually begin to talk about the problems that they're having, it's usually introduced with, we're getting a divorce. And it's gone so far that it's almost impossible to be able to resolve what's happened. But we believe this lie. We believe this lie that, no, you're just supposed to naturally be good at this. You're just supposed to know. And so we don't ask for help. It's amazing how many times I tell people that Anna and I were in counseling for several years, and they're shocked. I say, why are you shocked? We had to try to figure out how to be able to love one another as we're taking care of this child with Down syndrome and trying to figure out what our life looks like. You have to ask for help. But we think that you're just supposed to understand it. You're just supposed to know. Jesus doesn't step into your life and say, yeah, you've got this. No, Jesus actually constantly, he steps in and he's like, you guys, you really don't get this. There's one point in Matthew chapter 5 where he's trying to help them redefine what love is. And he says this. He says, you've heard the law that says love your neighbor and hate your enemy. He says, you've heard it said that love looks like this. And he does this all the time as he's teaching his disciples. He says, you think that love looks like this. You've heard it said that love looks like this. You've heard someone define love like this. He says, you've heard the law that says love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say love your enemies. He says, you see love this way. He says, but I want for you to understand. You don't really get it. And I want for you to understand what it actually is. And he's constantly trying to help them redefine that. He says, you've heard it said that you love people who like you. He says, but I want you to love your enemies. And I know some of you are here today and you're thinking to yourself, enemies, I thought this was a relationship conversation. You've clearly never been married. Because there are times that you feel like the one that you love is your enemy. He says, you see love this way. He says, but love actually looks like something different. He says, pray for those who persecute you. In that way, you'll be acting as children of your Father in heaven, for he gives his sunlight to both the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the just and the unjust alike. He's talking about how God loves people not based on what they do, but that he loves people based on who created them. says, if you love only those who love you, what reward is there? Even corrupt tax collectors do that. If you're only kind to your friends, how will it be different from anyone else? He says, no, love is different than what you think. And one of our greatest problems is that we continue to think it's you're just supposed to know, or we really blow it, and we think that we've got it. We think that we've got it figured out. This past week, we were down in South Carolina, and I had the chance to be able to be away with my family and to be able to enjoy a little bit of sun. And as we were down there and enjoying the sun, we decided we were going to go miniature golfing. And my youngest has gone miniature golfing twice. And we get out there, and he is doing better than his older brother. And so he's convinced he's the greatest miniature golfer that ever lived. And he just keeps saying it over and over again. Dad, I'm amazing at this. I'm incredible at this. Until finally I had to turn to him and say, no, Cole, you're actually not very good at this at all. But you could get there. You could get there. And for some of us, we're like that. We're walking into this and saying, I've got this. And Jesus is stepping in and saying, no, you can get there. But right now, you're not there. And you have these ideas of love. You have these ideas of love that aren't accurate. And one of the first things, and you see it, if you ever read through, this is really important for you to understand as you're reading through, especially the story of Jesus, and you're reading through the words of Jesus. Some of you read through the words of Jesus and you get really frustrated, because one of the things that Jesus does over and over again is that he sets the bar really high. As a matter of fact, the next verse in this passage is he says, I want for you to be perfect just as your heavenly Father is perfect. You say, you want for me to be perfect? What do you mean you want for me to be perfect? And there are times where Jesus is constantly, he's raising the bar, raising the bar, raising the bar, raising the bar. One of the things that you need to understand about what Jesus is doing in those moments is he's not saying, okay, I'm going to love you only if you get it right. What he's trying to say and what he's trying to help you to realize is, listen, I don't have it together. He's trying to get them to the point where they realize, I need a savior. I need someone to save me because I can't do it. And one of the things that he's trying to do in our life when it comes to love is get us to the point where we realize, well, I don't have this. Where we realize that we need help. Where we realize it's not just going to come natural. Where we realize that we need him to speak into our life, that we need someone to teach us, that we need someone to train us, that we need someone to help us to understand love for what it actually is. And you see him constantly raising the bar like that in order to be able to help us to understand, no, God, we need for you to speak into our lives as it pertains to love. Because I don't get it. One of the first steps to recovery in every other life is to admit that you have a problem. And one of the things that Jesus wants to do in your life is to be able to help you to understand, no, you have a problem. Not because he's going to leave you there, but because he wants to take you somewhere. Not so that you feel bad about where you are, but so that he can actually lead you to where he intended for you to be, so that he can, as we talked about last week, so that he can create in you again. But that can't happen unless you admit that you have a problem, unless you admit that, no, I don't actually understand this love thing. It's not just going to happen to me naturally. I need to learn. I need to grow when it comes to love. Because I don't understand a love. I don't understand a love that works with my enemies as well as it does with my friends. I need for you to lead me and guide me. I need for you to speak into that in my life. You have to admit that you have a problem. On the count of three, I want for you to turn to your neighbor and say, I'm not a good lover. No, wait, strike that. turn to your neighbor and say, I'm not good at loving. One of the first keys to success is when we embrace the fact that we need him to teach us, that we need him to speak into our lives, for him to recreate in us the ability to love. And when you embrace that and you step into this journey with him, when you embrace the fact that, no, I need for you to teach me, one of the first things that he does is that he begins to shift your vision. He begins to shift your vision. Now listen very carefully to me, because many of you don't think about life this way, even though you live life this way. All of us, we have a vision. We have a vision of who it is that we want to be. We have a vision of what we want our life to look like. We have a vision that we're pursuing. Sometimes we talk about it as a dream, but it's more than just a dream. It's more than something that we hope for. We have a vision, and it determines the decisions that we make. It determines the jobs that we take. It determines the clothes that we wear. Why? Because I have a vision. And that vision is compiled as we grow up in a variety of different ways. It's impacted by the parents that you have. It's impacted by where you grow up. It's impacted by the movies that you watch. There are all sorts of different things that help you to shape this vision. And inside of that vision of who you're going to be and what your life is going to look like, part of that is what love is going to look like in your life, or what relationships, romantic relationships in particular, what they're going to look like. And for all of us, these visions are different because they've been impacted by a lot of different things. And there are a lot of different things that have influenced these visions. But this is what we imagine our life to be. You need to pay attention. Just a side note. You need to pay attention to your imagination. Your imagination has incredible power. One of the really unique things about us as human beings is that we have the ability to be able to see what is not and then be able to bring that into reality. We have the ability to imagine what is not and to be able to bring that into reality. Your imagination has an incredible ability to come rushing into reality, which is why it's very careful, which is why it's very important that you're careful with your imagination. If you're daydreaming about somebody who's not your wife, don't be surprised if one day that imagination comes rushing into reality. I talk to people all the time and they say, I don't know how it happened. It happened because you allowed your imagination to wander. And you began to develop a vision, and that vision has an incredible power in your life to actually become reality. And all of us, we have these visions of what our life is going to look like. We have these visions of what our relationships are going to look like. It's more than just how we define love. It's our vision. It's our picture of what it looks like. And it takes all sorts of different shapes and forms, because for every single one of us, it's different. If we were to go around this room, every single one of you would share a different vision of what love looks like. And for some of us, it's interesting because, again, it's shaped by a lot of different things. So for some of you, love is long kisses in the rain and rolling in the sheets. And this is what love looks like. For others of you, love looks like the perfect family and that perfect family photo. And you're going to have that perfect family photo. This is going to be us until you realize that your kids do not sit still for photos. And they will not sit still for photos. I'm convinced that perfect family photo, those kids were tranquilized. Convinced those kids were tranquilized. A couple years ago, my youngest son had just been born, literally. He's like 8 months old. He must have been just about a year. So we're trying to get the perfect family Christmas photo. So we set them down in front of the tree. We hand my youngest one to my oldest one. We're like, you just hold them. This is going to be beautiful. We're going to have that perfect family photo. This is what love looks like. And we decided, oh, you know what would be great? We'll give them all an ornament, and they can all hold an ornament. It'll be perfect. It'll be beautiful. So we hand all of our kids an ornament, and we step back, and it looked great. And my wife is just about to take the photo, and my second son takes that ornament and literally smashes it over the head of my 1-year-old. There goes the perfect family photo. Pretty sure if someone saw that photo today, they'd take our kids away. You have this vision. This is what it's going to look like. And we're all going to be color coordinated. It's going to be amazing. And then you finally get your kids to sit still and you realize your husband spilled on his shirt. Or you have this vision that you're going to enjoy your family while you sit and watch football. Until you realize Bud Light has been lying to you for years. That never happens. We have these visions of what love is going to look like and what our relationships are going to look like. But here's the problem with almost every one of our visions. And for some of you, you know exactly what I'm talking about because you're more aware of this. For others of you, you have to think more about what this looks like in your life. But when you think about it, here's what you're going to find. Almost every one of us, the vision that we have of what love looks like, it crumbles when it encounters a broken world and broken people. It crumbles when it encounters a broken world and broken people. And you find yourself thinking, I need new people. You find yourself thinking, I need different kids. How did I get this devil child? How did this happen? And you live your life constantly angry at the brokenness of the people around you because they're screwing up your vision. And you're frustrated and you're angry. You're disappointed with the brokenness of the world around you because they're screwing up your vision. And you find yourself thinking, I need different people. But here's the thing, your vision doesn't work when it encounters the brokenness of the world and broken people. And you can't escape it. You can change people all you want. Doesn't matter. We're all broken. And Jesus steps in and says, You don't understand what love looks like. Love doesn't just work with your friends. Love doesn't just work when things are going well. Love doesn't just work when they love you back. Love doesn't just work when they sit still. Love doesn't just work. Love works even with your enemies. I want to introduce you to an entirely new idea of what love looks like. But he doesn't just want to do it. He doesn't just want to do it with words. He wants to give you a new vision. He wants to give you a new picture. He wants to give you a new dream. So he doesn't just step into his disciples' life and say, no, I want for you to understand love looks like loving your enemies. No, he doesn't just talk about it. One of the most powerful things that Jesus does when he goes to that cross is he gives you a new vision. Not just with his words, but he gives you a flesh and blood vision. A picture. He said, I'm not just going to talk about this. I'm going to go to the cross. I'm going to show you. This is what it looks like. And when you wanted nothing to do with me, and for some of you, you're here today, you want nothing to do with him. It doesn't matter. He went to the cross for you. He went to that cross for you. And he says, I don't care if you're for me or against me. I'm going to that cross for you.
Whether you follow me or you walk away from me, I'm going to that cross for you. And he gives us a different vision. He introduces us to a different picture. He says, no, this is what love looks like. Love isn't at its peak when it's kissing in the rain. Love isn't at its peak when everyone is for you. Love is at its peak. Love is at its peak when it actually encounters the brokenness of the world and the brokenness of the people in our lives. You see, his vision of love doesn't crumble when it encounters the broken world. His vision of love doesn't crumble when it encounters broken people. It thrives. It gets bigger. It gets better. And he said, no. This is what it looks like. Now, the problem is, for many of us, we don't have very many physical things to look at to see this. We don't have very many physical stories to look at to see this. But the truth is, historically, we've seen them. We know what this looks like. And there's something inside of us that knows, no, that's greater love. That's greater love. This past week, we remember Dr. King and what he did. There's a reason why we continue to remember him, because he's someone who fought for what was right, knowing that bullet was coming. He knew it was coming. But he said, love isn't self-serving. Love at its peak. Love at its peak is selfless and sacrificial. Love at its greatest loves even though it may cost everything. Jesus is saying, let me give you a different picture. Let me give you a different, you have to shift your vision. You have to shift your vision. So some of you have heard me talk about the first time that I ever told a girl that I love her. It was a traumatic event. A very traumatic event. I was dating this girl. I think I was seventh grade, somewhere around there. And she had been telling me that she loves me. We'd got to that point. And we'd get to the end of the conversation. We'd come to the end of our time together. Oh, I love you. And I'd look back and say, thank you. I know. I appreciate that. Until finally, I'll never forget where I was standing. I literally can picture it today. Just outside of our school. And she looked at me and said, Chris, I love you. I said, okay, now's the time. She needs to hear it. I said, I love you too. I never got to see the look on her face after I said it, because as I was saying the words, I felt a hand grab the back of my shirt. I went flying through the air about 10 feet till I hit the other side of our van. I turned around to see my dad closing the doors on our van. We had this big conversion van, so it had the two doors opened on one side. I turned around to see him slamming both doors shut. If you had seen it from the outside, you would have thought this kid was being kidnapped. I thought to myself, what in the world is going on? My dad climbs in the van and we start driving home, and my dad is livid. He's not upset. I've never seen my dad this mad in my entire life, ever. He's steaming. His face is so red, beet red. He's so angry. So angry. I'm thinking to myself, what did I do? What in the world did I do? You're like coming back through the last couple weeks. What did he find out about? What did I? We get home and he sits me down. And he looked at me, he says, when you're willing to do for someone what your grandfather does for your grandmother, you can tell them that you love them. My entire life, my grandfather had gotten up every morning, gotten my grandmother out of bed. She had MS. It was too painful for them to sleep together. He'd gotten her up out of bed, gotten her ready in the morning, fed her breakfast, went to work, come back, do the same for lunch, go back, come back in the evening, spend the time together, get her ready for bed, put her back in bed. I never saw my grandmother walk. My entire life, that was my grandfather's life. In that moment, what my dad was saying to me is, your vision of love is too small. You need a bigger vision. You need a bigger vision. Jesus is stepping into your life and my life, and he's saying, your vision's too small. Your vision's too small, and it's not going to hold up. It's not going to hold up when it encounters the brokenness of this world and the brokenness of the people around you. But if you'll follow me, if you'll follow me, I can show you a bigger love, a better love, a love that at the core of who you are, you know, is what you actually want. It's what you actually crave. It's what you were actually created for. For the next couple weeks, what we're going to do is we're going to look at how Jesus reshapes the vision that we have of what love looks like. But here's the great thing. Here's the great thing about what Jesus is calling us into. Because your vision of love, you don't really know how to do that. You don't know how to create that. Most of us live as victims of love. And so we talk about falling into and falling. Love like happens to us. Jesus' vision of love doesn't happen to us. It happens to the world around us through us. Listen, most of you live as a victim of love. And so when you fall out of love with someone, you have no idea what to do about it. How do you recreate that kiss in the rain? Starts raining out. Hey, let's go. I don't want to get wet. This is weird. What's wrong with you? You have no idea how to be able to do it. Love to you is mystical, magical. There's nothing practical about it. The vision that Jesus has for love is not something that happens to you. It's something that happens to the world through you, and it's incredibly practical. You notice in that passage where he's talking to them about love, it doesn't have to do with how they feel. It has to do with what they're doing. You see, for us, love is a feeling that moves us to action. To God, love is action that impacts how we feel. Let me just say that one more time. To us, love is a feeling that moves us to act. And so we're waiting for the feeling. We're a victim of the feeling. We have no idea how to be able to actually create that or change that. And sometimes we think it'll be easier to find it with her than with her. And it leads us in all sorts of destructive decisions. For us, love is a feeling that moves us to act. To God, love is an action that impacts our feeling. Which is why Jesus says, I don't care where your marriage is, I can fix it. Which is why Jesus says, I don't care what your past is as it pertains to love. I can teach you what this really looks like. But you have to admit, I don't understand it. I need you to teach me. You have to let go of those visions that aren't going to hold up and allow him to begin to reshape what love looks like to you and to me. Allow him to call you to something bigger, to something better. And allow him to teach you how to practically do that in the lives of the people around you. We need a bigger vision. And if you let him, he can lead you to it. Will you pray with me? Father, I thank you that you care enough about us to first and foremost love us in the way that you have. To go to that cross for those of us who wanted nothing to do with you. To not just talk to us about what it means to love your enemies, but to demonstrate it to us with the way in which you loved us. Dad, we don't understand this love thing, but we know that you do. So we ask you to teach us. Help us to love better. Help us to take one more step and following it. And trusting it and being like you. Some of you are here today and you've wanted nothing to do with God because you didn't know that God loved you this way. I want to invite you to journey with us for the next couple weeks. To see the vision of love that he's not only taught us, but that he's shown us. The love that he has for you. The love that he wants for you to know. Father, I thank you for how you've loved every single person in this room, every single person watching online, every single person who's going to listen. Thank you. In Jesus' name. Amen.